Stein Online's live Clubland Q&A is just 1 minute away.
This is Mark Stein, back after four sellout voyages for the fifth annual Mark Stein Cruise. If you like the sound of April in Portugal and Spain on the fabulous new ship, the Celebrity Apex, well, you'll be at the apex of celebrity for our traditional week of sun, sea and civilizational collapse. I'll have special guests from both sides of the Atlantic, including a reunion of all your favourite telly presenters from the glory days of GB News, who've since been sacked. And we'll do all the things you like about the Mark Stein Show and Stein Online, but close up and on water. More details at steinonline.com or marksteincruise.com.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. Here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. October 30th, 2024. We are 1 week away from the commencement in the early hours of Wednesday morning of America's uniquely unique peaceful transfer of power. This one's going to be a corker. It is 3 p.m. North American Eastern Time, 4 p.m. in the beautiful Canadian Maritimes, 4:30 p.m. in fabulous Newfoundland. Because in the Americas, which way round is it? The Americas are still sprung into summer. Eastward ho. They have fallen back to winter. So 7 p.m. in London, 8 p.m. in Paris, 9 p.m. in Jerusalem, 10 p.m. in Moscow, 10:30 p.m. in Tehran. For all you Newfoundlanders who moved to Iran out of solidarity with the half-hour time zone, midnight 45 in Kathmandu. For all you Iranians who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone, 3 a.m. in Singapore and Honkers, 6 a.m. in Sydney and Melbourne, 8 a.m. in Auckland, and an even more convivial hour for the kippers and Kedgeri in His Majesty's dominions across the Pacific. First up today, from South Australia, Mike Lau complains, "Hi, you never mention the half-hour time difference in Adelaide." No, I don't. You know why? Because our recitation of the time zones moves eastward as we push into tomorrow, because we're so forward-looking and optimistic. We're not one of these people who's always looking backwards and deeper into yesterday to find out what we can get John Durham to launch a big Durham report into. So we always push forward by pushing eastward, where you guys are ahead. And we apply the same principle to our special time zones. For example, as I just said, in Iran, they're on the half hour. And then we go to Nepal, which is on the quarter hour. So we can't go to Adelaide and go back to the half hour, because that'd be like going backwards. You guys have to take it to the next level. You have to introduce a 7.5 minute time zone. And I'm sure that's pretty easy to do. I used to get to Adelaide quite a lot. Part of my isolation post-COVID, I don't seem to have got back down there in the last couple of years. But who do I know? Alexander Downer. He's a big Adelaide guy. I had tea with him at, I forget what hotel it was, but it was very impressive. The way he drove up in his roller, his Rolls Royce, and he just tossed the keys to the doorman, who recognise. Now, this is before he's doing his Five Eyes entrapment of Papadopoulos in that wine bar. But Alexander Downer, the doorman, obviously recognised what a big shot he was, and so he just took the keys. And so have a word with Alexander Downer and get yourself put on a 7.5-minute time zone, and I'll be sure to mention it. Today, across the Russian Federation, is the official day of remembrance for the victims of political repression. I think that's victims of political repression in the Soviet Union. But there's no reason why they couldn't add Keir Starmer's and Joe Biden's political prisoners to the mix. And I hope they do, just to wind up Washington and London. Hasn't been a great week for me so far, as some of you may know, if you read The Guardian. A tough break from the English High Court. It's two decades of continuous litigation in the District of Columbia, because that's what it's going to come down to. That judge, what's his name? Judge Irving? He's yet to rule on the post-trial motions. That trial ended 9 months ago. And he's basically running out the clock on this, because he's going to be rotated in the way they do in that crappy courthouse in DC. He's going to be rotated out of there and will be on to the sixth trial judge, an expression that doesn't exist in civilized countries. And we'll have to go back to the beginning and start explaining things to him all over again. So he's yet to rule on the post-trial motions, even though the trial ended 9 months ago. And you throw in the Ofcom battle and my ill health, and I won't deny it's getting burdensome. My doctors think it's too much. And, just running the numbers, I'm not sure I can actually afford to continue being alive. My economic viability decreases with each day, which is sobering. Actually, I'm getting maudlin. And I don't usually do maudlin. I'm usually a barrel of laughs. Ride, Maliacho, sweet amor infanto. Is that how it goes? I'm forgetting the lyrics. The end must be nigh. We have breaking news from California's floppo governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger. What did they call him? The governator. He couldn't, after his famous film, The Terminator, he couldn't terminate anything. Anyway, the rock-ribbed Republican is back, and he's backing Kamala Harris for president. That's a first in American politics. The nanny shagger endorses a fellow nanny shagger's wife. Is nanny shagging a high status thing at the highest level of American politics? I'm actually asking seriously. Because there are so many recurring themes in American politics that I've been in America, the less I grasp. Headline of the day from a non-American newspaper, of course. This is from the Daily Mail in London. Gotta love this one. ABC mistakenly airs election results. That's mistakenly in quotes. This was during a live broadcast of the Mexican Grand Prix. The Chiron, the lower third, read Harris 52%, Trump 47%, with all precincts reporting. So you can take that to the bank. My old friend John Hinderaker at Powerline says the Democrats are preparing to go scorched earth. The early hours of Wednesday morning. He's right. They're going to stick it to you deplorable fascist garbage Nazis in every way they can. Okay, let's get to your questions. Mark Shear says, Mark, let's take as given that the fraud has a good chance of prevailing again, and life for the next 1,000 years or so will be solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. But would you please, please take the current brief window of favourable polls and early voting tallies to comment on the reasonable best case. All I ask is another week to be allowed to dream of a brighter future. Words do not suffice for my gratitude for all your work. Thank you, Mark. It means a lot. These polls are polls such as Trump has never had before. If you go back to 2020 or 2016, in all these swing states, Hillary and Biden were 5, 6, 7 points ahead. Now, Trump is ahead. He's not up. And by the way, this conversation assumes these polls, for the sake of argument, reflect anything meaningful, which I'm not persuaded they do. But they are the best polls he's ever had compared to 4 years ago and 8 years ago. And they show him ahead in these states, not by much, by, 0.4%, 0.7%, 1.3%. But they're very different from the polls in the same states in 2016 and 2020. And I'm not sure you even need to take a poll. I think there's a huge gulf now between the coverage of Trump in this ghastly corrupt media and what's happening on the ground, because it is clear that people who weren't Trump, I mean, you just look at it, the senator from Puerto Rico, I didn't realize Puerto Rico had senators, but apparently they're pretend senators who are allowed to use the senatorial bathroom, but don't get to vote on anything. So apparently it's some arrangement like that. Don't ask me why. I don't understand the system, and at this stage, I'm not interested in understanding the system. But the senator for Puerto Rico has just endorsed Trump. Then you have these big shot imams from Michigan endorsing Trump. Then you have these, they do these soft focus features where they send along whoever it was, CBS or NBC, to an historically black barbershop. I think that's the way we're meant to say it. And the black guys are all sick of Obama, sick of Michelle Obama, resent being treated just like lobby fodder. And herded into the voting machines. So there's no doubt. I don't think there's any. Tucker put it well. The big Madison Square Garden thing, when he said, so when they announce that Kamala has won with 85 million votes, no one's going to believe it, and that's true. But it doesn't mean they're not going to do it. Because I don't think they really care whether you believe it. If you look at what's happening with this garbage quote, where Biden, because he's a nasty son of a bitch, quote unquote, as John O'Sullivan said 2.5 years ago on the Mark Steyn show, he accidentally, this is one of the things people, if you've lived with a relative with dementia, you'll know that this is one of the things that happens. The things that normally protect you, particularly in politics, are your sense of inhibition. You know, the thought rises unbidden in your gullet, but you know enough to force it back down. And Biden doesn't now. So he actually said what he thought. He said that Trump supporters are garbage. And they've been trying to clean it up. It's perfectly clear when you watch the video clip, that's what he's saying. But the media, and this is the disturbing thing, because this is why I think the big steal is on, because I don't believe that whatever one feels about them, their big legacy outlets, 60 Minutes at CBS or, these other guys who are now saying, oh, well, that's not really... They're doing this. They're being so brazen about it because they know the fix is in. But the fact of the matter is that what we're seeing, and it's never enough, whether you're talking about America or Britain or Canada or Europe or wherever, it's never quite enough. But the movement is all away from the permanent uniparty. So a no good, worthless, what's the word? Oh, yeah, piece of garbage. Nazi garbage. Isn't he from the same country as Hitler? Schwarzenegger is completely out of it. Mitch McConnell is completely out of it. You know, whatever you feel about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or Kamala Harris or Tampon Tim, they've got a base. Trump has got a base. But the uniparty Republicans like Schwarzenegger and Lynn Cheney have no base. I think if they steal the election, if Trump isn't decisively elected, that's why a landslide would be better. These 50-50 elections, all they've done in the last quarter century, have polarized politics to an absurd degree, completely absurd, you know, and they brought about the rise of Trump. And I think if they do steal the election, they will have to steal it on such a scale that there's no point pretending any of this stuff means anything anymore. You might as well. If you're serious about taking your country back, you're not going to be able to go to a voting booth and do it. I mean, the stories that are coming out, and they're all in one direction. The Secretary of State for Colorado, you know, the same Secretary of State who kicked Trump off the ballot And the ballot boxes being set alight and all the other flim-flam is all in one direction. And so, yes, they're going to steal the election. And the only way to prevent that is if the groundswell of movement toward Trump just accelerates through to next Tuesday. And in a way, you know, even that is... Where I'm in danger of looking at that as I would if I were talking about a Canadian election or something, because over half the American people have already voted. But there's got to be a bigger swell towards Trump, because it's got to be such a decisive victory that his victory at 10 or 11 o'clock on election night cannot be outdone by the unmarked vans driving ballot boxes around in the small hours of the morning. But the movement, you know, it's pretty encouraging, actually, the way Kamala has no appeal to anybody. Zero appeal. She's an example of what happens when you take this DEI rubbish too far. She's people, you know. I mentioned that thing the other day where the New York Times says, oh, you know, we all know that if she was a man, she'd be 30 points ahead by now. Well, yeah, if she were a man, nobody would have heard of her because she'd never have got to be Attorney General of California, and she'd never have been chosen by Biden to be Vice President of the United States. She's a nitwit, and nobody's going to believe that she's the President of the United States if they decide to make her it in January. Aaron Everett says, I'm old enough to remember when we actually stood in line in Colorado to vote and could still elect Republicans. A little bit before this, we get carried away on this standing in line thing. That's what... our British listeners would call queuing to vote. I'd be interested from our Commonwealth listeners to know if you've ever had to queue to vote. I know when I've voted in both Canada and in the UK, because Canadians can vote if they happen to be living in London or whatever. Usually when I... For a start, you don't have to quote-unquote stand in line because there are sufficient polling stations. So you walk in and generally there's, you know, one or two or sometimes no people in this. You just walk in, vote, and then walk out again. This idea of standing in line for hours. I've never understood this. I'm trying to think about the last time I was, I think that was in Quebec. And you get a little, you get a card, and I don't know whether it's the same way now, it's been a while, but you get a card telling you where your nearest polling place is. And it may be, and there's a lot of them, so it may be, you know, 200 yards in one direction, 200 yards east or 300 yards west. It's only this America. Oh, we're totally exceptional. We got nothing to learn from you Europansies. It's part of what makes us so free is standing in line to vote for a day and a half. And again, it's something that exists to enable the shenanigans. To enable the shenanigans. You know, America blows through money on everything. Everything. There's nothing it doesn't spend. There's no line item in the federal budget that isn't less than $1 billion, because otherwise you're not taken seriously. But so we I'm not even talking about the billions and billions and billions you generous American taxpayers insist on lavishing on Ukraine, a country where when I was there, the lovely hotel I stayed in was €8 a night, including breakfast and dinner. So so there's money for everything except polling stations. Don't you think that's a bit odd? I don't mind in New Hampshire, you just go down to the school gym. And it's all over in, you know, 10, 15 minutes or whatever. But the idea of having to stand in line to vote. Anyway, this is just Aaron's first sentence. He's just warming. Sorry about that. But I'd be interested if, from our Commonwealth listeners about all this queuing for hours. There's a direct correlation, says Aaron, to mail-in voting and the degradation of our state into a deep blue pit. He's talking about Colorado. This is the state where the Secretary of State has just, the same woman who kicked Trump off the ballot, has just accidentally... published all the access codes for the voting system online. There's a direct correlation to mail-in voting and the degradation of our state into a deep blue pit. It seems that the ruling class is interested in reducing voting into the easiest form of participation so that it means less and less in each election. Why do you think there is such a fetish with making voting so accessible? Why go through the charade if the goal is one party anyway? All the weeks of counting and hyperventilating seems excessive and extra nuisancy if your goal is to punish the garbage anyway. Because that's a familiar sign in all totalitarian societies, making a big deal of the voting. They made a big deal of the voting in the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact. Saddam Hussein made a big deal of the voting in Iraq, even though there was no possibility. It wasn't, you know, that Saddam in the polls was within the margin of error. But he went through all the flim-flam. He had American-style campaign themes. He had, I think this was his last election. He had Whitney Houston, "I Will Always Love You," as his... That song and that guy were perfectly matched. That was his campaign theme, because the more you... the less you have to do with a real election, the more you want all the theatre of elections. And that's why in that we have this, oh yes, it could be weeks, it could be months before we, like in that New York congressional district, it could be months before we know who has actually won the election. I like that. I think it was in the Babylon Bee where it goes, senior Democrats warn it may take 4 years to count all the votes. That's what it'll be. If not this election, then the next one. But your point, I don't think there's a, I think it should be, look, other election, this is incredible. This whole thing with all these voting machines, it doesn't actually make it easier. I mean, things like motor voter laws make it easy. So they want to make certain things easy, like you not being a citizen and making it easy for you having come across the Rio Grande the previous Thursday to vote on Tuesday. Things like that they want to make easy. But everything else they've made more difficult than it is anywhere else in the world. If you look at how they run elections in India, which has, a billion people, they managed to do that more expeditiously than the United States does. It's ridiculous. This, and I don't even know, again, there's this, no one ever questions it. No one ever questions, oh, yes, it may be weeks before we can count all the. Why is that? Why is that? It's ridiculous. So they want to make certain things. And that's, again, the complexity of it bolsters the ease with, oh, well, it's all so complicated, so we couldn't expect someone to have a piece of ID on them. That would be totally racist, even though that person needs a piece of ID to come and visit me in my congressman's office in Washington, or to go and to get into the CNN or PBS building and be interviewed about how totally racist it is to demand ID. You need a piece of ID. But the one thing you don't need, you need ID for everything in America. Except for, so the whole idea is to make things like that easy so that anyone can, you know, anyone can vote in American elections, but to make all the other stuff like going and standing in line incredibly onerous and difficult. Paul Nachman writes, you favor paper ballots cast solely on election day counted that night at the polling place. So do I. Further, I would eliminate absentee ballot voting except for military serving abroad. I think that's correct. Because the military are the only ones who have no choice in the matter of whether they're going to be abroad. You know, if you decide you'd rather go and lie on a beach in the Bahamas on election day, well, that's fair enough. And good luck to you. And I hope you get a fantastic tan. But that's a choice. And it's not unreasonable to say that if you, and particularly in America, where election day is the same bloody day every 4 years, right? So it's not like, in the Westminster system where the guy goes to the palace and asks the sovereign to dissolve parliament, and it can come at any time. It's not like in France where Monsieur Macron, can, after he didn't like the numbers Marine Le Pen ran up in the European election, so he called a parliamentary election instantly 3 weeks later. It's not like that. It's the same bloody day every 4 years, every 2 years, if you want to make a fuss about the midterms, right? Same. It's regular as clockwork. So if you decide, oh, well, that's when I always go to the Bahamas, that's your choice. And I don't see why you should be allowed to vote if knowing 2 years in advance every time that that's election day, you decide to go and lie on a beach. And so I'm with you on that. I mean, sometimes you have to get, you can't just do all this, you know, American exceptionalism routine, because some things really haven't worked out too well. And so just because that's one of those things, you know, there have to be, there's a balance. Any time you have, well, I quote that example when France tried mail-in voting in the 70s and they had all this fraud from Corsica. You know, they'd never had that before. There's a lot of countries that have never had any election fraud. I mentioned Denmark a lot. But when you have, when you say, oh, you can do anything you want, you don't even have to be, you don't actually have to be out of the country to vote by absentee. You don't have to be absent to vote by absentee ballot. So all this is rubbish, and it's made your elections crap. I'm getting ahead of myself here. Paul Nankman says, well, what about the actual counting of the votes in a way that's accessible to poll watchers? You're used to voting in Canadian ridings, where a Canadian friend assures me there's typically just one contest for that riding's member of the federal or the provincial parliament, and typically not both on one day. So hand counting the paper ballots in a poll watcher friendly way is easy and quick. But I'll be that's not necessarily true in the Westminster system, by the way. You can in England and Wales, I think. It's not and Northern Ireland too, I believe. It's not unusual to have both to have different votes on the votes for different levels of government on the same day. So it doesn't necessarily have to be that. But you say, I'll be voting later today against my one-day election principle on a Montana ballot that will have about 20 different contests, political offices and referenda. Yeah, that's the same as in New Hampshire. You've got your state rep, and you've got your county commissioners and various other things that you're also voting for. So consider election day only voting for 20 separate contests. If each contest had its own sheet of paper, counting and observing the count would be straightforward but hugely labour intensive, and there would be a blizzard of paper, plenty of opportunities for confusion. So finally, my question, is there a practical way to count an American elections results without using machine? I don't see why. There's only two federal offices that the nation as a whole votes for. That's the president and the vice president. I don't see why you couldn't have that on a separate day. But the interesting thing is, the point you make is exactly why we know there was fraud in 2020. Because all those late arriving ballots in the early hours of Wednesday morning checked the box for Joe Biden for president and didn't vote on any of the down ballot races. So those people had no interest whatsoever in senators and congressmen and governors and dog catcher and anything else. The thing is, the election system. And again, it's the same point I make with the Constitution, because I think it's true. A Constitution that was designed, people was a bit of back and forth about this in the comments, that a Constitution that worked for 3 million relatively homogenous people in the northeast of the United States doesn't necessarily work for a third of a billion people. And I think that's certainly true with this election system. Something has to be done, because otherwise all it means is, oh, yes, the election was stolen from us for the second time, but we're just going to go back to the we've got the greatest constitution in the world dance and do that for the next 3 years and 364 days until they steal the next election from us. There will be no point. If they steal this one, there's no point to American elections, so we shouldn't even be arguing about whether you put the dog catcher on the same ballot as the president, because you might as well go and hole up in the hills and launch bloody revolution. Queen of the Jungle, possibly not her real name, or possibly it is her real title. Perhaps she's gotten ahead of the game and actually has fled into the undergrowth to launch a revolutionary movement. Oh, no, she hasn't. She says, greetings from Nueva York, the land of the freak, land of the freak, and home of the depraved. As we close out the most important election cycle in the history of the universe, here's my question for today. If you could give President Trump one bit of advice in these final days and hours, what would it be? Many thanks from a dedicated fan. Well, I have to say, I think He's fought a brilliant campaign. Now, people can say, oh, God, he was terrible in that debate with Kamala, or his speech wherever wasn't so good. But it's a binary system. And when you look at what they've thrown at him, I mean, I was talking about my own situation litigation wise, and I certainly couldn't take what's thrown at him. The ability to concentrate on this, he's picked much better people to run this campaign. Things like the McDonald's thing were brilliant. I saw somebody today say he should take a run on a garbage truck somewhere in a swing state, taking out the trash. And that probably is a good idea. You know, they've got to do, and then they can, then these awful, awful court eunuchs of the American media can go into their, oh, well, he's not a real garbage truck worker. It's just a photo op. Yeah, well, it went better than Biden's photo op where he said half the population are garbage. So, yeah, I would think doing something like that. Let's see what we got here. Semolina Pilchard. That could be a real name. Greetings and good health to Mr. Sine. Is it possible that a gentlemanly outcome to next week's presidential election will be impossible? The Trump faction has already earned a reputation, deserved or not, as a sour loser in the face of electoral defeat. The Dems are on a roll in terms of demonizing their opponent as a Nazi. So do you think that they would take defeat by Adolf 2.0 gracefully? A most important requirement for a functioning democracy, acceptance of election results and a peaceful handover of power is in jeopardy. Can street violence be far behind? Well, of course not. People... The purpose of democracy is to bind the loser to the result, because the loser feels he's had a fair shake and, okay, he came close, he only got 49.98%, but, you know, the next election will be in 3, 4, 5 years and he's got another shot at, because he's had a fair shake this time, he'll get another fair shake next time. That's not how it works in America. The Republicans are not the sour losers here. You know, in fact, Republicans during the 90s and the first 15 years of this century got very good. They are the world's masters at giving dignified concession speeches. Nobody gives better concession speeches than Bob Dole, John McCain, Mitt Romney. They're among the classics of concession speeches. The Democrats have not accepted the legitimacy of a Republican presidential victory since George Bush Sr. in 1988, which is what, now that's, 36 years ago. They didn't accept Bush's victory in 2000. Remember all those bumper stickers they drove around with, the selected president, as opposed to the elected one? And they didn't accept his victory in 2004 because of those stupid exit polls that showed John Kerry sweeping Ohio. Everyone got excited at the Spectator in London because I'd written a column saying, you know, pundits, to be taken seriously, have to put their money where their mouth is. So I said, yeah, Bush is going to win. Take it from me. And if he doesn't, I'll gladly resign from the Spectator. And on the Tuesday afternoon, when they were getting all these... there was a Spectator... I think the big shots at the Spectator were the American ambassadors... quadrennial election night party at the US Embassy in London, the fancy one in Grosvenor Square, not that, you know, Afghan style compound they moved it out to on the South Bank. And I was in New Hampshire. I was getting from friends who were at that party who overheard the conversation between a lot of the, they go, you know what this means, the end of Mark's slide. And they were all happy about it. Anyway, the Democrats didn't accept the result of the 2004 election. They didn't accept the result. Hillary never accepted the result of the 2016 election. She blamed it on the Macedonian content farmers. So, you know, I know what you mean. But Trump is upfront about everything. The Democrats institutionally have delegitimized every Republican victory going from the last third of a century. And you can't, that can't continue forever. What's interesting to me is it's more, you know, if you look at Quebec elections, the Parti Québécois and the Quebec Liberal Party do not agree on what country they're in. If you look at Northern Irish elections, the Democratic Unionist Party and Sinn Féin do not agree what country they're in. But that's actually a serious dispute. Whatever one feels about it, that's a serious, meaningful dispute. The garbage line exposes what is so poisonous about American politics, because it's not about wanting to be in La République du Québec or in a unified Irish state. It's actually just because you're garbage. They think you're trash. And the horrible thing about responsible government, self-government, democracy, whatever you want to call it, is that all the garbage people like you have a say. And so when you look at their issues, like, oh, he misgendered me. You know, when you look at the pronouns, when you look at the climate change, oh, like, he's not taking seriously the threat to sea levels in the Maldives in the year 2237. These are, in some strange, weird way, these are more profound differences than those between loyalists and Republicans in Northern Ireland or between federalists and separatists in Quebec, which are sort of, oh, yeah, I don't really like this country. I'd like to be in another country. That's fair enough. These guys just hate you for who you are, and it becomes tougher and tougher to live with the the logic of that is the logic of this stuff that's gone on, just the Nazi stuff, the garbage stuff, is that there are two groups of people, and really they shouldn't be in the same country. It's far more obvious than it is in Ireland or in Quebec or the other fractious places. It just shouldn't be in the same country. This is Stein Online's Clubland Q&A live around the planet. Oh, looky here. Here's Mark Stein to tell you all about our weekend music show. Hey, this is Mark Stein. On this week's show, we have a proposition. Inside every rock anthem is an easy-listening masterpiece trying to bust out. Plus, a presidential edition of our Sinatra Sextet, and Jack Jones sings everything from Nelson Eddy to Bryan Adams. Mark Stein on the town, Saturday at 5 on Serenade Radio. And, yeah, Saturday at 5 is 6 p.m. in Western Europe, or 1 p.m. this week only, 1 p.m. North American Eastern, because one side of the Atlantic has fallen back and the other hasn't. So that's Mark Stein on the town, 1 p.m. North American Eastern on Saturday, or 5 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. And don't forget, on Sunday, I'm going to have a brand new Stein Song of the Week, songs by mayors, governors, senators, presidential candidates, and the only big, solid hit song written by an American vice president. That's 5:30 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time on Sunday. And The Americas will have fallen back to winter by then, so it'll be the regular time, I believe, of 12:30 p.m. Eastern time, if you can follow all that. Not sure I can. Eric Dale writes, Mark and fellow club members, what does it say about the United States that the Democratic Party can align itself with the most odious parts of the old George W. Bush coalition, Wall Street billionaires and the interventionist Cheneys, as well as the more extreme elements of the LGBT QIA. I'm not even sure I know what the Q are, because I've called it LGBT QWERTY for so long. I don't know what those latter letters stand for. And still have a better than average chance of winning this election. Are we at best delaying the inevitable? Well, with every I think about this when I think of my book, which was largely right about everything except the United States, America alone. I thought America was serious, because in part because of people like Dick Cheney, who called me in to have a chat with me, and as George W. Bush did, as Donald Rumsfeld did, and various other big shots from the early years of the century. And I thought America was serious. And in the end, after, you know, what happened is that by sort of 2006, 2007, it became clear that America was profoundly unserious. And so when you say, are we at best delaying the inevitable? I was listening to Ann Coulter today. You know, Ann Coulter has fallen out with Trump because Trump didn't build the wall. So she's mad at him about that. But she made the point, you know, elections, the biggest, the most existential threat of all is when you, to any country, is when you change the people. Because if you, you know, even Wales, you take all the Welshmen out of Wales and you replace them with this Rwandan stabber, it's not Wales anymore. And what has happened is, that's more or less what I pointed out. I said, is it just like a cast change in a Broadway show? You know, the show's still the same. It's just a completely different set of people. Like when David Merrick, after Hello Dolly with Carol Channing and Ginger Rogers and all the rest of them, then decides he's run out of big white ladies for his Broadway staircase, so he's going to turn it into an all-black musical. Everything's the same. It's just that it's an all-black version of Hello Dolly. And that's what people think. People think that's the same. You can do that with countries. Oh, yes, we're going to have an all-Muslim version of France. We're going to have an all-Muslim version of Ireland. But it'll still be Ireland. Don't worry, it's just that all the little leprechauns will have to turn and face Mecca and bow. That isn't how it works. So Ann Coulter is quite right that the most important existential threat is the open borders. And the numbers that they've loosed on the country are incredible. As I said, it works out about twice the population of Norway. And they've come in. And so I keep getting all this stuff from people. So I live in a small town with 3,000 people. There's now 3,000 Haitians who've been moved. So your town has suddenly gone from 0% Haitian to 50% Haitian. Yeah. How's that going to work out? You know, but we never talk about anything important in the only people. This is where the Uniparty is useless. And I wrote this in 2015. I wrote this like a week after Trump came down that escalator at Trump Tower. You know, we keep, oh, he's just a blowhard, he's some TV celebrity, some, yeah. But the odd thing is that when he said Mexico isn't sending his best, he was the first person to introduce a real subject into your crappy two-year elections. All the serious people, Marco Rubio, oh, we need a second American century. Well, actually, there'd been no real improvements in middle-class Americans' income now for 40 years. So instead of worrying about the next American century, could you just try and address making the remainder of my life marginally less crap? And then we had the whole thing, you know, the Lehman. Who was the Lehman brother in that? The guy, John Kasich. He's on the board of Lehman Brothers, right? Okay, fine. Got nothing against that. If that's your bag, good luck to you. But he's not running as a Lehman brother. He's, well, the only man who could ever reach me was the son of a mailman. So oh, he's doing all these soft focus ads. You see in New Hampshire, you get, they play in New Hampshire on New Hampshire TV stations for like 2 years. You're so sick of them. I'm proud to say I was the son of a mailman. Trump was the only one who talked about anything. Does Trump ever make these ads saying, oh, I grew up poor in Queens. I was looked down on by snooty people from Manhattan. He doesn't do any of that. The thing, somebody was talking about authenticity. And they revived those remarks I made after seeing Trump live, where he was complaining that because he was now a presidential candidate, he'd had to start going around in this armored vehicle. And it was hideous as hell, but it could take, you know, people firing rockets at it or whatever. So he's doing this, and he's saying, yeah, I hate it. They just hustle you out on to the pavement, they open the door, and then the guy, the security guy, just slams you into this hideous thing, looks like a Brinks van or whatever, and then slams the door on your ass. Trump's just doing this, and he goes, you realize if I win this thing, I'll never get to ride in a Rolls Royce ever again. And everyone in the audience fell around laughing. You know, people who drive, guys who drive Chevy Silverado trucks, and women who drive secondhand Honda Civics or Toyota Corollas, and we're all howling with laughter because, unlike John Kasich and the rest of the gang, he's not pretending how poor he is, how just, you know, like Kamala saying, oh, I grew up in a middle-class household. Yeah, you grew up in a middle-class household in the toniest part of Quebec, which is what the town of Westmount is. You know, what happened? It was fine during the post-1950 American moment, you know, in which Carter's malaise was just a little teensy-weensy blip. But basically, what's happened since Reagan is that reality and the dead rituals of presidential politicking have just broadened out to ludicrous. You know, who, you know, so like the tampon dispenser is America's dad, right? That guy, Tim Walz. And this year's British subject, the Jamaican Indian from Quebec, is I'm just like you because I grew up in a middle class. Don't you ever get tired of the bollocks? It's bollocks all the way down. It's bollocks on stilts, as what's Blair's guy, Alistair Campbell, used to say all the time. This is bollocks on stilts. People need, you know, Mrs. Thatcher's thing. First you win the argument, then you win the election. And this whole system is designed to enable people like Kamala never to have to make an argument. And Trump, 2020 wasn't good. That wasn't a good campaign. But 2016 and this time round, he is the only one who actually talks about anything that matters. And Ann Coulter is quite right. You know, if the Democrats get away with the usual shenanigans on Tuesday, in the early hours of Wednesday morning, then you will have another 4 years of open borders. And so that means that, oh, I live in a a town of 3,000 people and they've just moved in 3,000 Haitians. Well, they'll have moved in another 3,000 Haitians. Some of those Haitians, unlike the depressed American fertility rate, will have had far more babies than you. So your town will then be about 70% Haitian. They're going to do this to you. They're doing it to you. And nothing is ever talked about. You know, they've been talking about some comedian's gag at this Madison Square. I hadn't heard of this guy. I think I caught about two or three. Somebody I read on the internet said they liked one of his lines and put up a video clip. And so the line wasn't bad. I didn't think anything else the guy said was that kind of formula comedy that I don't really like. It wasn't my bag, but I don't know anything. I'm out of touch. I'm past it. I'm a has-been, so these new kinds of comics, I generally don't find them terribly funny at all. But the idea, I haven't said a word about that guy. I haven't written a word about that guy because he was the warm-up for 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 Melania for Trump. So he's like bottom of the billing and he's all the crap worthless American media has talked about. And then Biden actually says something worth discussing, which is that half the American population are garbage. And so, oh no, was it PBS? NPR? Oh no, yeah, we're not going to talk. That's not a real story. By the way, did we mention this comic told an unfunny joke? What was it now? 3 weeks ago? I don't know how these people can live with themselves. It's like Jennifer Rubin after congratulating the gal from the Los Angeles Times for resigning on principle because they wouldn't they wouldn't endorse Cobbler. Then the guy at the Washington Post says, we're not endorsing Cobbler either. And so suddenly, little miss resignations on principle a go-go, Jennifer Rubin has gone all quiet and hasn't resigned. Thank you for your work, says Joe. The left continues to project when it calls Trump alternatively an autocrat, a dictator, a fascist, a Nazi. This coming from the party that ushered in millions of unscreened, including contagious and criminal migrants in contravention of the law, while stifling and prosecuting working citizens for trying to carry on earning a living and or having the tenacity to question the government's COVID response. Your thoughts, Mark, says Joe from Islip, New York. I've given my thoughts on that for years. Yes. What's the phrase that they popularized over at VDare? Anarchy. Anarcho-tyranny. It's like the more there are no laws that apply to people who aren't anyone who comes in over the border, they can engage in sex slavery, drug dealing, driving without a license, killing somebody while you're driving without a license. They can do anything they want. And the more license that 8 billion undocumented Americans, I think that's the potential number, the more license, according to them, the more you are harried in every aspect of your life. I used to contrast the people coming in the southern border with the harassing of teenage bagpipers from New Hampshire who'd gone over the border to take part in a bagpipe competition in Canada and then are told when they come back with their bagpipes they need to pay a $700 fee or they're going to be or the thing with my kids and the Kinder eggs. You know, this country that lets in this guy who shot at a Jew, that's what he was doing. He was by a synagogue, and Jews with visible signs of their Jewiness, which, you know, the big shot rabbis in Toulouse, in France, and in Berlin, in Germany, said, the best thing is not to go around with identifying marks of your faith, right? In Europe, in the 2020s. And so this guy in Chicago, he was on his way to the synagogue and he was shot. He was shot by a guy. He was shot by a guy who Biden and Harris let walk into this country in 2023, because that's the focus of the Department of Homeland Security is to prevent my kids bringing in Kinder eggs or my neighbor's sons bringing in bagpipes. And the American people put up with this from having every aspect of their life micro-regulated. The more you're micro-regulated, like the Department of Homeland Security, I'm on the record on this. When it was first proposed, I said no. On the conservative grounds, the proper conservative grounds, so not George W. Bush conservatism, but on the conservative grounds that if you create a department to deal with a particular problem, you'll never be rid of the problem because the bureaucracy will become self-perpetuating. And so by about a decade ago, you'd read all these weird stories. The Department of Homeland Security had raided a strip club in Boston because knockoff Red Sox merchandise was being sold there. I don't know why anyone would want Red Sox merchandise in the first place. Not even sure whether they're a basketball team or an American football team. And don't tell me. I don't want to know. Not interested. Not interested. I'm not like your presidential candidates, like Tampon Tim pretending to be interested in sport and getting all the lingo wrong. I don't go there. I used to say the morning after, because Rush would always be at the Super Bowl, so I'd always be doing the show on the Monday after, and I'd always do this thing. Oh, I love the Super Bowl. Always watch the Super Bowl. I love it when they sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game in the seventh inning stretch, and then we'd move on. But I'm not going to do a Tampon Tim and pretend I know anything about these things. But they raided a strip club in Boston. The Department of Homeland Security raided a strip club in Boston because it was selling knockoff Red Sox merchandise. They went round to some guy just living in the middle of the country, or actually in a suburb somewhere, because he'd imported a British sports car, he'd imported a TR4 or a Lotus Elan or something, and they didn't feel he'd paid enough duty on it. So they went, did their usual money, no object, SWAT teams, a go-go raid to grab the guy for importing a British sports car. Meanwhile, they're letting the guy who shot this Jew, they let him in, no problem. So it's all bollocks. It's the Republic of bollocks. So don't wave the Constitution at me, because the Constitution has enabled the Republic of bollocks. So you have a bureaucracy that was set up to prevent Jew-hating jihadists from entering the country, and instead it's at they're undercover at strip clubs, which is a hard place to be undercover at least if you're a girl. And they are there to investigate knockoff Red Sox merchandise. Why is that a federal issue, by the way? I gather the Boston Red Sox are called the Boston Red Sox because they're in Boston. So you'd think it was the sort of thing Boston law enforcement could deal with. Chris Davis says, Mark, I hope you're well. Chris held a lovely party for me and some of the old GB crowd and a lot of people who went to court to support me at the Royal Courts of Justice in the Strand. Chris says, I was going to talk about Ofcom, but that would involve too many profanities. Good to see Special Agent Biden doing his best to derail Team Kamala by referring to Trump supporters as garbage. This from the man who has presided over 10 million plus garbage immigration flowing across the southern border. Now, Chris, you don't know that all the 10 million are garbage. The official position of the authorities on mass immigration is that these are all the doctors and scientists and lawyers that we're going to be needing. Chris says, with all the momentum seemingly with Trump, are we now beyond the margin of steel, or do you think the Dems will do whatever it takes to engineer a positive result. I think, as I said, I think if you look at everything that's going on, what they're going to do in the small hours of Wednesday morning, the genius of the American system, which I mentioned again, I think, recently, but I remember saying it at a symposium that Michelle Buckman put together a while back now. You know, when Bill Barr says, oh, we see no evidence of widespread fraud that could change the result. For a start, the change the result is not the standard, you pillock. France eliminated mail after that one experiment with mail-in voting in the 1970s because of the fraud from Corsica, which is like Quebec or Northern Ireland. There's an argument about what country they want to be in. But whoever was Attorney General of France then could have said, we see no evidence of fraud sufficient to change the result. That's not the standard in a civilized country. The fraud is fraud. And when you find fraud, you stop the fraud, as the French did. You don't just say, oh, we're just going to be totally relaxed about this. And then maybe if it does change the result, we'll get back to you. No, that's not. Everything that's going on right now, including the burning of ballots, including the people, somebody who no longer lives in, I think it was Michigan, was writing today that she'd just been sent an absentee ballot, mail-in ballot, even though she doesn't live in that state anymore and therefore is ineligible to vote there. You know, all this stuff is happening, and the Colorado stuff, all the stuff is happening in places where the Democrats basically control the election system. So it seems reasonable to conclude from that the stealing is going to be done by Democrats. And they know they've got to steal a lot more than they did last time, and they're gearing up to do it. And there's nothing really... It's not really, I think someone I just saw a couple of minutes ago, we had a note from someone who quoted my old friend Anthony Daniels' thing, where he said the purpose, talking about the communists, where he said the purpose of the lie isn't, I want to give credit for it, but I can't produce the particular email, but he said the purpose of the lies in the Soviet Union was not to make you believe the lie. The purpose of those lies was to force you to live with the lie, which is a humiliating thing, a degrading thing. You are a smaller person for living the lie, that's absolutely right. So the more the incentive, therefore, is to make the lie even more brazen. Nobody likes Kamala Harris. It's not even like with Biden. There were people who remembered him from the 70s and quite liked him back then. There's nobody, as far as I can tell, with Kamala Harris and the tampon boy, there's nobody who likes either of them. Tucker's right. No one is going to believe that they got 100 million votes, which is what may be necessary to steal this thing. But they don't care about that because you'll have learned the lesson. It's like what they did on January 6th. This is accelerating punitive leftism, and the point is to punish you. So Trump has fought a brilliant campaign, and they're gonna and that is all the more reason why he needs to be punished. They're serious about this stuff in a way that others aunt. Norman Fenton. Norman Fenton came along to the English High Court that day, and Norman says, "I'm sure you will be commenting on the Tommy Robinson imprisonment." I think I already have commented on it. I think I wrote a column on it, didn't I? I'm wondering if you saw the ludicrous statement put out by Britain's official Jews, the Board of Deputies. That's credit where it's due. That was Ezra Levant's thing during our difficulties with the human rights commissions in Canada, where all the B'nai B'rith and the Canadian Jewish Congress were all in favour of the hate speech laws. They wanted, so they didn't want guys like me saying it. And they're all buddies. Bernie Faber was a big buddy of the Canadian Islamic Congress. And now he's surprised that there is no future for Jews in the Dominion of Canada. That's on you. Kathy Schadl used to say he must be adopted because he's too stupid to be Jewish. And she was quite right. But yeah, he got his Queen's, whatever it was, the Queen's Golden Jubilee Medal out of it. So, and was it the, is he in the Order of Canada? I don't know. He's got a lot of them. But he's destroyed any future for Jews in Canada. Now we have the, I don't really know, and the, what is it, the Anti-Defamation League are the same things. Again, just the wankery. They did something just in the last couple of days, the ADL in America. What was it? It'll come to me. Anyway, the Board of Deputies of British Jews in London said, "We welcome the jailing of Stephen Yaxley Lennon, a.k.a. Tommy Robinson, after the repetition of false allegations against a Syrian refugee. This past summer, we saw how such lies can lead directly to hideous consequences on the streets of our country." Well, that's a joke. Because, in fact, all the people who are now in jail for tweeting and Facebooking turned out to be totally right about that Rwandan guy. He had the Al-Qaeda manual in his backpack. We didn't learn all this during the summer. I would bet that the police knew this within 48 hours. And he had ricin. He had basically a bio lab. He was manufacturing ricin for a mass terrorism attack, and he had the Al-Qaeda training manual, and we've only just discovered. So basically, there were two narratives that day. One was the official narrative that he's a Welshman, quote, originally from Cardiff, unquote, as the lying chief constable of Merseyside said. And he's a Christian with mental health issues. And then there's all the people who are now in jail for figuring, stabbing people with a stabbing little girls with a machete. That sounds like the sort of thing Islamic stabby stabbers do. And they were right. They were right on that. But the priority of the Board of Deputies, a British, they're not going to be any Jews. I only really. I don't get around as much as I should. So the main British Jews I run into are my old friends from the old days who tend to be showbiz Jews. And all the showbiz Jews, including people that Norman Fenton would certainly have heard of, all say there is no future for Jews in the United Kingdom. And that's because the official Jews, like the Board of Deputies, are all virtue signalling. Oh, Tommy Robinson was mean against the Syrian. Well, we think the priority when there are people marching around everywhere accusing us of genocide in Gaza, we think the priority is to show how much we like Muslims. Norman says, well, we all know now who were the ones lying about the Southport killer. Also, the Board of Deputies went on to praise the Marxist anti-Israel organisation Hope Not Hate, whose work led to the conviction. Why this required any statement at all from the Board of Deputies is a mystery, says Norman. But it seems many are still unaware that the BOD is a clique of leftist elites who don't represent mainstream British Jews in any way. Thoughts. Well, I sort of gave my thoughts. I really can't. I really can't stand it. Because they don't have the excuse. You know, I if you read what integrated, assimilated German Jews were saying in the late 20s and 30s, oh, this will pass, this will pass, it's a phase, this will pass. And it didn't. And but they didn't know. They didn't know that there were people willing to kill millions of Jews. I mean, not a lot of people, but there were tens of millions of people who, when the nice Jewish couple in the flat upstairs suddenly aren't there anymore, are happy not to talk about it. And the strange thing now is the ones who don't want to talk about it are organizations of official Jews. Why do you think Jew hate has metastasized on the streets of England at every Western university? And do you really think that the answer to your problem is to demonstrate ostentatiously how much you dislike Tommy Robinson? Now, there's a lot of that about. What's his name? Richard Tice, the deputy leader of Reform, was denouncing Tommy Robinson on GB News, and Nigel Farage was doing it just a few weeks ago. The gatekeeping, the over-gatekeeping, the urge to show that you're part of the nice, respectable people. I remember Warren Kinsella saying at the time Ezra and I decided to go nuclear on the Canadian Human Rights Commissions. We decided to, as we used to say, we're going to go Magna Carta on their medieval asses, which we did. And Warren Kinsella said, people aren't going to put up with a couple of ugly, unlikable blowhards like Stein and Levant talking this way about the Human Rights Commissions. But we did, because we calculated that it was necessary for us to move 20 yards in order to drag all the weeny respectable people an inch. And we largely succeeded in that. That's why, you know, people like Margaret Atwood basically changed their minds on the Human Rights Commissions. And Neil MacDonald at the CBC and various other liberals in good standing. And Nigel is going the opposite route here. This reform, this need to denounce Tommy Robinson, you're playing on the left's terms. You're allowing the left to frame the issues here. And apart from the actual obvious injustice, which is that this is the British state targeting one man, and then putting him in prison. The only thing that's happened is that he's in Belmarsh, which is the same prison, by the way, that this guy who stabbed to death the schoolgirls is in, right? So he's there for contempt of court in a civil case because he showed a movie that the British state has banned. And he's in the same prison as people who stab little girls to death. And the friends of the guy who stabs little girls to death, the Al-Qaeda guy, run those prisons. So the object of putting him in there is to get him stabbed to death. And it shouldn't really matter whether, you know, at some point, Nigel has over-gatekept. And that's not helping. That's not helping. Anyway, I thank you for your all your many. As usual, we've had far more questions than we can get to, and there's a lot of very good questions there. But I'm afraid that's going to do it for today. Stick with Stein Online for our regular Thursday date with Laura's Links. Laura Rosen Cohen will round up the internet as only she can, and in these final days of the American election, we'll keep an eye on all that stuff before we move to the critical round, the uniquely unique peaceful transfer of power starting on Wednesday, and we'll probably have coverage of that too. If you're still toying with the pros and cons of joining the Mark Stein Club, come on in. The water's fine. We'd love to have you. And don't forget, for the Steinshy chum in your life, there's a Mark Stein Club gift membership with his or her name on it. Stay safe, stay free, stay well.
Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.